Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick little note for kicking off the episode. First off, Happy New Year's, January 1st with this episode dropping. First day of the new year here. Looking forward to hopefully some good things this year. It was really funny last year. At the beginning of 2020, I sat down with Annie and I sat her down very seriously. And I said, Annie, I have a really, really good feeling about this year. Like, I just have a feeling 2020 is going to be phenomenally good. And I was pretty excited. And then, of course, we had 2020, which ended up actually a lot of bad things happened, of course, notably with the pandemic, but there's also some great parts as well, and feeling optimistic for this new year. Anyway, all that being said, like I mentioned last week, going to bring you one last episode from the previous year that I really enjoyed. Per the tradition, usually do the last two episodes of the year right after New Year's and Christmas. And then next week, we'll be coming back with a brand new episode and back with fresh episodes every week thereafter. So hope you enjoy it and Happy New Year. Hey, it's Andrew, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus store owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Dafina Smith, the owner of CovetandMain.com, a company she started selling high-end hair extensions. And her story is really interesting because why in the world would you ever stop selling to your end customers? Why would you never let people, you know, buy from you on your website in these days when direct-to-consumer is just all the rage? Well, that's exactly what she did. And we're going to get into why she decided to do that, how and why it was a really effective pivot for her business and how it even strengthened the brand long-term for her. We also get into her story. She's got a really interesting story in terms of how she came from the non-e-commerce world into the e-commerce fold, and just a fascinating discussion all around. I hope you enjoy it. And one thing I haven't done in a long time, I'd love to get back in the habit of, is giving some shout outs and some welcomes to the new members of our private community. This is the E-Commerce Fuel private community for seven-figure plus store owners, because we have some really interesting people selling some very unusual and very cool things joining the group. And so a shout out to Kyle Marcart, and apologies if I butchered your last name there, Kyle, the owner of LoriWallBeds.com, sells very cool Murphy beds out of Barcelona. Ryan McKenzie, owner at True.Earth out of Vancouver, selling eco-friendly laundry strips. Philip Brand at Satisfy.com, who sells Nintendo Switch accessories out of California. John Rosen, the owner at Wildkin, specializing in kids' gear, backpacks, and all sorts of apparel and furniture. Kevin Magnan, the director of e-commerce and digital marketing at Love Good Fats, where they sell keto foods out of Ontario, Canada. Lindsay Chase out of Beaverton, Oregon, from littlestockingco.com. Really sells a really cool selection of girl socks and tights with her co-founder, Chris Brewer from OMG Commerce. He's Brett's partner over there, and these guys are experts at Amazon and Google ads. Prudence Millsap from beautybyearth.com, selling beauty products out of Clearwater, Florida. And then finally, Ali Prosla, owner of uspolypack.com, selling all sorts of poly bags, wraps, shipping bags, and things like that out of Houston. So thank you all for joining. It's been a lot of fun to get to know you on the new member call. I just see you in the forums. And if you'd like to join us too, some of these fantastic people alongside them, you can learn more about our community, what makes it unique and special. The big thing is just the members. We vet our members really heavily to make sure everyone's got real experience. That makes for some pretty cool community and discussions. You can learn more at ecommercefuel.com. And finally, before we jump in, a big, big thank you to our friends at Klaviyo who make the show possible. If you haven't heard about Klaviyo, you've been probably either new to e-commerce or just don't pay attention very well. A phenomenal tool that makes email marketing and SMS marketing incredibly easy, powerful, and profitable. By far the number one most used platform in our community for email marketing. And the reason is because they're targeted and segmenting engine is second to none in terms of being able to create custom flows that fire the right message at the right time to your customer to either engage them, bring them back, or to get them to buy something. And so incredibly powerful. Check them out if you're not. You can test drive them for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. All right, let's go ahead and get into my discussion today with Dafina. Dafina, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thanks, Andrew. I'm excited. This is a very full circle moment for me. So thank you for having me.
Of course. Glad you were able to come on. And I always regret not recording right when we hop on. I do it because I would lose any trust and credibility with guests. probably a good reason not to do it. But we had such a fun talk before we actually hit record about, like, man, I don't know if you necessarily want to get back into all of it, but you have had a really interesting, cool life. You went to school at Georgetown. You got a law degree. You've went to school in South Africa. You were a real estate agent for Beyonce. You worked in the music industry. And I asked you, but maybe you could say, of all the different things you were, I think you worked as a buyer for Bloomingdale, and of course, in e-commerce as well. What have you enjoyed the most just in terms of raw fun from all the different things you've done throughout your life?
So I think in terms of raw fun, I would say when I worked for Outkast Management, I started off as an assistant and then I just ended up doing so many things in like the film and television, planning amazing parties for when they got nominated for the Grammy. It was during the time that they did the Speaker Box Love Below, it was that double album. And it was just, to me, it just represents a really, amazing time in my life. Great people I was around, really creative artists who were really empowering to women. My boss, Michael Williams, he was really great and empowering to me. I got to lead with my interests. But for me, I mean, the real thing why it was so much fun was there was great parties. And then there was great parties.
That always helps, yeah.
Yeah. And then the second thing is I'm a very like analytical, linear person, and I'm so intrigued by the creative, the writing process, the just how a song comes to be, especially those that are just so like memorable to our lives. And so it was just so cool to be a part of it and just to see their process. And like, I remember we were talking with like the White Stripes at the time about maybe doing like a tour with them and just seeing all of these different musicians from different genres. Like, it's just, I could have been a fly on the wall forever for that. So that's why it was just so much fun for me.
And so you've got this crazy, super glamorous, really fun life and career in the music industry. And how did that transition into e-commerce? That's a fairly big transition.
You know, I think people hear, and I'm so thankful that I had the chance to do all those fun things, but I love independence and I love my autonomy and I love to travel. And one thing that I realized fairly young is, especially the more that you work within like the celebrity realm, you're really on like their beck and call. And there's not a lot of freedom necessarily. Like you work, you know, when doing real estate, if you get a last minute call, you know, now I want to protect my clients' privacy as well, but you know, they'll call you. Artists are also very last minute. So everything is last minute and they need it now. And if when you deliver and you do good, then you get more and you can wake up in this orbit of you're kind of like everyone's like fetch it person, you know? I mean, it's a service industry at the end of the day. And I wanted to be able to like take a holiday and not be on my phone the whole time or be more intentional. And that's why e-commerce for me has always been amazing. Because if you scale your business right, you can really have boundaries.
Yeah. So when did you start Covet in Maine?
Covet in Maine started officially 2018, the beginning of 2019, but I had been working on it since 2017. And working on it, I was really like really in-depth focus groups. I was kind of working with like a pilot member. I didn't have a name or any of all of that, but I was just trying to figure out the specs and get the product right. So, but it officially started
2019. And just for kind of fast forward and then we can go back in terms of today, can you give people, and if you don't want to do exact, that's totally fine, but just a rough ballpark in terms of maybe revenue and team and kind of just where you are today with the business?
We are like upper seven figures and hoping to scale rapidly, but mindful of the challenges of 2020. So, and also just, I'm kind of at that place right now where I think somebody was talking about this on the forum, like, what's the perfect size business?
Yeah, I saw that thread. That was an interesting one.
Yeah. And so we're, you know, that's where we are right now in terms of size and revenue.
And you mentioned something that like a phrase that just kind of stuck out to me is you said, you know, if you scale your business properly, you can really be able to turn it on and off. And I know, man, as entrepreneurs, a lot of times we go into business, same reason you did, for that freedom and autonomy. And sometimes you find, and not to say you don't have those moments where you have to be chained to it and really cranking away, but sometimes for longer periods than we'd like, we're not able to get away. So how are you, as you scaled the business, very meaningful size now, what kind of things and ways have you built the business to really try to protect, at least to give you the optionality on non-infrequent occasions to be able to step away? How have you tried to scale it so it doesn't consume your life?
I am the enemy of great. And I learned that very early on. So if everything has to go through me, then it's not going to be great. And I've really tried to build systems very early on with this company. And believe me, this was a learning process, because I've been in other businesses in e-commerce and I did not do it right. And it all went through me in some shape or form. And I hated it, you know, I hated it. So now I don't have a huge team, and I try not to delegate too much, but I think I've understood what I can't give away. And really for me, that's, you know, I'm a buyer, I'm trained in that. I really understand forecasting and sales and assortment and all of that. So I don't give that away, because that's like my secret sauce. You know, I never did the books. I use Bean Ninjas from day one. I have an operations person who she's like operations consultant for several other companies as well. She's been instrumental from day one. And my team, we create dashboards and we have systems. And as much as possible, I really try, you know, I'll create the framework and I can, you know, look in and check, but I don't do the framework. And I think that really, and I really have a good sense of who's the best fit for doing that framework. And I leave them alone. Once I see they're doing it, you know, I leave them alone and I trust them to kind of empower them as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's hard to do sometimes.
It's so hard.
It's so really hard.
Maybe not sometimes. It's always hard to do. It doesn't go right all the time. I'm going to be very honest. And then that's when you have to have those, you know, I say you have to have those very uncomfortable conversations so that you don't have to have an ugly conversation, but it doesn't always go right.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is somebody said, your success in life is largely governed by the number of uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah. I think that's so true. And I think for a long time, especially because when I started, I was very young, I would avoid and push it off. And then I would try to imagine some business that doesn't involve an uncomfortable conversation. And it doesn't exist. You know, it's just, you just got to get better at getting through what you got to go through.
Yeah. You just get, like anything, you get better with it with time. So back to kind of the beginning of the business, you sell hand-tied hair extensions. So I think a lot of people are probably familiar with maybe hair extensions, but a couple of things, seems like it would be a competitive market, and hand-tied, I'm sure, is different. So can you maybe give people just an idea before we dive into maybe the last couple of years and how you've pivoted, what the product is and how it's different from other ones on the market?
So for those who are aware of extensions, most of them are, they are someone else's hair and your hair, and you have to connect the two. And so most methods involve either like clip-ins or something that's like you take on, you take off. It's not permanent. So at the end of the night, you get sad again because your hair is gone. Or you have something more permanent and they use glue, or they use adhesive, or they use keratin, whatever the marketing name for it is. It's either there's some type of stickiness that makes it stick from their hair to your hair, or there's other ones that use like you clamp on a bead or something like that. And most extensions over time, if you're doing that, I mean, you can imagine if you're gluing and then taking out and re-gluing, over a couple of years, your hair is going to thin out, and you're basically having to choose between having the hair of your dreams or having healthy hair. Hand-tied extensions eliminates that. And it's because it's very, very lightweight. And so when someone says it's hand-tied, it literally means someone sits at a loom. There's no machine involved. There's no sewing. It's just literally a woman hand tying, or a little woman or a man hand tying in little strands onto a very fine weft. And it takes a person one day to make one bag. So it's very labor intense, but it delivers this like very seamless lightweight. It's not going to pull. There's no need for glue. And it's really been transformative, I think, for a lot of women, again, to be able to have the hair of their dreams and still have healthy hair, myself included. And I just feel like for the outsider, like the average Joe, I'm like, okay, hand-tied hair extensions basically allows, like, if the wind blows, you're not going to see your extensions. And you can put your hair in a ponytail or a bun. That's for the average person, long story short.
Got you. Okay, super helpful. And is this something that you came up with and created, like as the, I don't know if technology is the right word, or the technique for attachment and the creation of the product? Was this something brand new in the market, or was this something that was already being done but not done by a lot of people, or not done as well as you're doing it?
It's been around for a long time. But so I was saying, I was working on the product for about 2 years. I wanted to improve it. One of the problems with hand-tied hair is that it cannot be cut. So because it can't be cut and everybody's head is different, it renders the novelty of it, of being really, really lightweight and seamless, becomes like moot if you have to cut it, because then people are either like folding it over or they're using glue. So I invented was not the product. It was an enhancement to the product, which is a cut point weft, which is basically introducing 4 points along the weft that allow you to cut it, and it's only going to unravel to the next point. So that was, you know, where we have our patent in, and we're, you know, waiting, going through that process for design and utility. And that was really what I had to, because I wanted to bring to market something that was innovative and a problem solver, not just marketing.
So speaking of direct to consumer, I want to talk a little bit about how you grew and made a pretty big pivot. So it sounds like you started and you launched direct to consumer, selling the hair extensions, you know, just right to the end consumer. And for reasons which you'll share here in a minute, where you are today, it sounds like you don't sell to. In fact, I went on the website and maybe I missed it, but I wasn't quite sure where I could even. I think you had to have an application where you had to apply as either a salon or a professional. So you're not selling to the end consumer anymore. You're selling just to, you know, those salons or professionals. And so you made that pivot. So could you talk about why, before we dive into like all the nitty gritty, what made you decide to make that shift? Because man, direct to consumer, it's so hot these days. Like, I mean, it seems a little interesting. What was behind that decision?
I think with direct to consumer, my product is unremarkable just in the hands of anyone. You know, and this is my experience, is that this is for professionals. They put in the magic. They know how to blend and cut and do the placement. And a lot of the frustration that an end consumer might have is that their expectations are unrealistic because they're not in the hands of a trained professional. So extensions are not taught in cosmetology school. It is strange, because a stylist who does extensions or specializes in extensions makes 7 times more than the average cosmetologist. And I see this, you know, every day. And so it's kind of this Wild West zone of the beauty industry. And a lot of the consumer will have problems with something, and it's because they went to somebody who was trained on YouTube or just doing putzing around, but they blame the product, and it's not the product's fault. And you just can't, it's just, you know, for every consumer that you're having to educate, they're not even a cosmetologist, or you might have a cosmetologist, but they have absolutely no training in it. And so it was just frustrating. And I wanted to create, I was like, this is almost like, I like to make like analogies, but it's like if, you know, somebody was like Botox. You know, Botox on its own, if you could just go out and give it to
DIY the Botox kit.
Yeah. And people be like, no, but I have, like, we're going to, you know, show you on a map of your face where you put it. You know, that's not going to guarantee you. That's not going to make you look like someone who, you know, uses Botox at, like, you know, sparingly at the best dermatologist or plastic surgeon. It really, you know, that's where I was like, this is a tool. And it needs to be in the right hands of the right practitioners. And so really for that pivot, I also wanted to get away. You know, a lot of brands also just sell to professionals only, but I wanted to do beyond that. I really wanted to only sell to the certified professional, someone who is really committed to getting certified in hand-tied extensions. That was really important to me.
And so you maybe started direct consumer for a year or however long it was, probably had some nightmarish experiences with people, you know, trying to put the stuff in and then quickly realized you wanted to get to the end consumer. So how did you start that process? Did you go cold turkey? Did you just completely shut off direct to consumer and started looking for salons and professionals? Did you kind of ease into it? How was that transition? Because it's one thing to be like, okay, we need to switch our model, but like from a financial perspective, it's also tough to completely turn off the one that is probably, you know, keeping the lights on.
So that's a good question. So I launched Covenant Main as a separate from the get-go, as a separate standalone brand for professionals and direct to professional. In the 2 years, I was still having a direct to consumer facing brand, but it sold a lot of different products, a lot of different extensions. It's almost like the Best Buy of extensions. And so in that store, I kind of had like a hybrid model of you sold to consumers. And then we had like a special for stylist. And, you know, I was on Shopify at the time. So you almost had like a wholesale model, but they're not wholesale. They're just professionals. And so I started identifying people within that customer base of the stylists that I was working with of, you know, let's tiptoe into, we're trying out, you know, a new product. We'd love to get your feedback. This is, you know, in exchange for your feedback, we're going to give you better pricing. It's going to be very iterative. We're not, you know, we want you to be really honest. So that's how I worked it.
Okay, very cool. And so you would actually, the Best Buy of hair extensions, as you called it, you looked at that customer list and you found people that you potentially were pros that had, you know, were at salons, maybe had a lot of influence, things like that, and approached them. How did you actually do that? Because I think that's one thing, I think a lot of people listening, they've got these customer lists and there's a lot of people in there who could be huge brand advocates or have a lot of influence that makes, you know, makes a tremendous amount of sense to partner up and engage with them more personally than just their average list member. But it's hard to spot them. So like, how did you, there's needles in the haystack. So how did you find all those?
Just through good customer data and looking at being able to get on. And also, to be honest with you, I'm really into social media for that. Social media really gives you a good idea, especially for my industry. Instagram is going to tell you a lot about a stylist. I mean, most top stylists have great Instagram accounts. It's, you know, it lends itself to the before and after. And so that's a really good place to play with people. I say it's like the water cooler. And I just picked that. And then I also, as much as possible, I still believe in old school and getting out to meet people in real life and migrating connections that you make online. If you can, getting on, you know, pre-COVID, jumping on a flight and, you know, just meeting people and connecting, going to their salon. I think that then you have to start just treating it as, I look at it as, we are a, you know, a relationship-based company, a collective, something that's very organic and natural that just happens to be powered by, like, our website is just powering the transaction, but the relationship is very real.
How did you, if you have the names, is there any tool that you've used that you could dump a bunch of email addresses into it and it would link up and spit out related Instagram accounts?
No, I wish. I wish. I've been looking, because I was like, at one point I was even debating. Somebody wants to start this, a CRM system that integrates, has an API to Instagram so that you could really like pull those, but it just was old fashioned spending a lot of time in Instagram and who tagged us and then going to their stories and commenting. And yeah.
I mean, if there was huge opportunity here, probably huge opportunity because it's impossible / would violate all sorts of privacy laws, who knows. But if you could take your customer database, dump it into a tool and it would spit out, it would look at where the overlap was between your customers and people who had meaningful, you know, let's say Instagram or Twitter accounts, like that would be, oh my goodness. You could make a fortune if you could build something like that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So when you slowly are transitioning using this new brand to do that, how do you think about distribution? Cause like you talked about having it with people who are educated, super important. You've got to walk this line between having enough people to actually get some growth, but also making sure they're great professionals. It's in the right hands. How do you think about your distribution and who you partner up with? Like on your application, for example, what kind of things are you looking for people who are going to be a killer fit for to carry your product?
That's a great question. I want someone who's really committed to their craft. So I want to see that they're constantly learning. They're constantly getting different certifications, not just in extensions, but in color technique, cutting, blending. I want someone who is a visual communicator who can really tell the story of how they use their products and really bring to life for their clients their vision. That was really important to me. And then I also just want someone who, you know, I really looked for someone who was ready to go, you know, that this is what they do. They're committed to extensions. They're, you know, I really look for salons that are extension only, or if the stylist is extension only, so that we can, you know, have a deeper supplier relationship with them. I didn't want to have a ton of accounts. I really wanted to have like bigger, just more old school touch. I have full-time concierges on staff that are like, you know, full employees. I don't like to water down that level of service. And so I really wanted someone who, you know, I was like, if we could have 100 of just like the right accounts, that was initially my target. I was like, that's all, you know, that the 100 best artists. It's grown beyond the 100, but that's what I wanted when I first started out.
Of those, you know, of the growth you see in there, how much of it has been you reaching out to them and encouraging them to apply and saying, how much of it was you finding really great people and wooing them in to be distributors and carriers of your product versus people reaching out to you and saying, hey, I'd love to. And maybe my guess is early on, it was more of the push. And then as you built up a reputation and a brand, then you had more of the, you know, people coming to you. Or is that fair?
I thought it would be, and it wasn't. I think I became, because we only have one product, I could become maniacal about its quality. And there were a couple of things early on when I was sourcing that, you know, I would even have to push back from the factories. They're like, you're giving them too much. You're doing too much quality. You're doing, you know, and
customers
for me,
hate that. Oh, they hate that.
I was like, you know, no, I was like, this is my vision. I want to give them, you know, real craftsmanship. I really want this for me, because I have a personal relationship with my clients. It's not like they're random people that come up in an email. I wanted them to just get back to focusing on the confidence of, they just get to focus on doing their art and their magic and not worrying about if they were going to have quality issues later or if it wasn't going to arrive. And so I was like, if I can get that right, and I've seen this with brands that I've worked even at Bloomingdale's, like I always said, like Gucci and Chanel never went on sale. They were always excluded, you know, and it's because people rely on them to make, I mean, they really invest in the craftsmanship of the product. And that's what I wanted. And so early on, you know, I had that group, but it grew very organically. And there really wasn't, it was the product. I mean, it was really the product kind of sold itself. But that's also because I had the time and I had a lot of feedback. And I had to kind of scrap some things that I thought and reiterate a lot, a little bit further down the line than I thought, but I was really listening. I think that's something too with women, where we can tend to be very collaborative. And I really leaned into that skill.
And so today, are you still approaching most of those clients directly, or are most of your clients coming from just word of mouth, from hearing about you from other sources?
Most of our clients come from word of mouth. We are looking to expand into textures right now, and demographically, that's just a little bit, it's different than our current demographics. So for that, I have like a wish list of people, and we'll probably do a little bit of outreach starting fourth quarter. But for most part, it's really been word of mouth.
And I'd love to hear how you think about applications to, you talked about wanting to have people that are always learning, taking new classes that really are a student of the craft and really trying to master that. And some of those things you can maybe ask questions about, right? Like, you know, what courses have you taken? What education have you done in the last 6 months or 12 months? Others are harder to tell unless you really dive in. And so I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you structure those applications to really get a good sense of that without meeting the person and spending a, you know, half a day or a day with them, which you're not going to be able to do with everyone? Is it just like looking at like, how much time do you spend on these applications?
A lot. And it was funny because when we first started, that's all we did. And then we would, before we would extend account invites to people, we'd schedule a call and we would have a phone call with them. And then if we didn't feel, you know, we would want to get photos and references from their client. It's time consuming. And we really put effort into it. But I will say that for me, it was about, because we're really creating a relationship that is going to last. And I want to know that we're the right fit. And I also want, I mean, even though I'm not direct to consumer, I really do this in mind for the consumer. I really want a client when they're sitting in a chair to know that I'm getting Covet & Main hair extensions put in my hair. The fact that my stylist has access to this hair really means that they've been vetted. And I can really trust that, like, not only is the hair great, but like the care and the craftsmanship of installing it is going to be great because they did that legwork for me, you know? And so I do think about that because I've been in that position as well. So I wanted that. And so it's worth it for me to do the upfront legwork. And then even, you know, we still say, but there's been accounts where, unfortunately, you know, you can get it wrong sometimes and you have to close their account because it's just, they're not aligned with how you want to do.
It's funny to hear you talking about this because on one hand, like it takes a tremendous amount, or at least a reasonable amount of discipline to do that because especially when you're wanting to grow, you're wanting to scale up. The temptation is there sometimes, especially for people who are on the edge. You're like, this person's pretty good here and they're pretty good here. And like we do that with applications for our community. We try to do, you know, same thing, like taking a long-term approach. We want to have people, we want to front load the work, make sure they're a great fit. And hopefully if they are, they'll be around to be a part of us and be part of our community and relationship for, you know, for years to come. But almost every time when we look at an application and we're like, we're on the fence here, maybe we'll give them a shot, even though there's a couple of red flags, like, oh man, oftentimes it does not, you know, I'd say usually it does not end up well. And so, but then at the same time, like if you're willing to be picky and take that longer term approach, like in years, three, four, or five, like you build something that's insanely defensible and insanely valuable for people that may not have the patience to do that.
Yeah. And I think that was for me, you know, this wasn't my first rodeo. And I also had this sense of getting back to that intentionality of why I started. I wanted freedom to travel and be with my family. You know, I wasn't really doing this just to go on a money grab. And so I wanted to like sleep at night and enjoy. And I think that when you have those intentions, people can sense, suss out when it's not that. And then you get your clientele. And even for like e-commerce fuel, like I've brought in members to the forum and I think a lot of us have who were like, they would be a great fit. The member that I brought in, we attended together for the first conference. And it's like where you've built lasting relationships, you know? And I think that we as a community we're your best advocates because you like held to the standards and we can see that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thanks for bringing someone into the fold. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, you up for doing a quick lightning round to cap off our discussion?
Yeah. We have a potential tornado coming. This has been in the year of 2020, but I think I have enough time to do a lightning round. I literally interrupted by a lot of lightning, but let's go.
As long as you finish in the next 5 minutes so I can get into the basement and shelter in place. Yeah, no problem. Let's do a lightning round. Feel free to run at any time with no warning and I'll understand. But your favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Matoric. I hope I'm saying that right. I think it's how you say it, Matoric.
Oh, is this the plugin for WooCommerce?
Yes.
Yeah, from Bryce. Yeah, I have talked to no one who has not loved that piece of tech. Least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
WordPress/WooCommerce backend.
Did you have to move from Shopify to WooCommerce for some kind of, I was trying to remember when I was prepping for this interview. Was it because you couldn't sell extensions on Shopify? Is that right?
Yeah. So Shopify puts extensions in the same category as guns and porn. And
of course.
Yeah. So that made it, no, but you can sell on Shopify, but the problem is the transaction fees, and then you don't really get all like the benefits because you can't use Shopify Pay. So you get the transaction fees, plus you have to use a third party, you know, and then you're doing Shopify Plus. It just started to get, I mean, you could pay rent on a New York City, you know, it was getting expensive. I was so scared because I've always, you know, been a huge, and I still am a huge advocate of Shopify. But for me and the business that I ended up building, WooCommerce has just been so much more scalable and allowed me to be reflective of the needs that we just more customizable.
Here's one out of left field a little bit for you. I didn't prep you with it, but from your time in the music industry, you worked with a lot of artists, you saw a lot of songs kind of, you know, being, you know, kind of created and released out into the world. What was your favorite song from the time that you worked in that industry that you kind of saw released while you were a part of it?
Oh, I mean, that's such a good... So I would say there... Just because I have so many memories around it and I heard it like a bazillion times, Upgrade You by Beyonce. It was just really fun to see that video be made, that whole video album, but that song the most. And she is just such a consummate professional and honestly one of like the kindest, most gracious people I've ever met, whether they were a celebrity or not. And it was just really fun to see her like work so hard. She was like the hardest working person on set. And so I love that song and all the memories around it.
What's been the most effective marketing strategy for you over the last 6 months?
I would say elevating the onboarding experience. During the shutdown, we kind of just really focused on that piece, on the copy, on the welcome kit, on just really managing people's expectations. That's really paid off. I think if people get a good start with you, it just sets the right tone.
What's the last thing you apologized for that you're willing to publicly talk about?
On that note, I had to write an apology. No, about 2 weeks ago, I had to write just a really heartfelt note to my clients and just saying, you know, these last 30 days, 60 days, 90 days have really challenged me in terms of supply chain. You know, I sit and look at packing manifest, and we had a huge shipment just stuck on a tarmac because there was all this back and forth over the escalating trade war. And it's just been really hard to get all the little pieces and moving parts in the way that everything I used to rely on no longer is reliable. And, you know, so there was just so many delays this summer. And I just felt like we weren't living up to some of my brand promises of like reliable, consistent stock. And excuses or no excuses, COVID or not non-excuses, it was just like, I just didn't like that. And so I had to write just a really heartfelt note about that and be really transparent about what goes on behind the scenes of running a business this year.
And then finally, who's the most interesting person you've met as a part of being a part of the ECF forums and community?
So I would say Vivian. We've connected through the forum. So we were, you know, she was really gracious. What I love, and this is just back to your point about having competition. So shout out to Kinky Curly Yaki. They're an amazing website. Love her. Love what she's doing. We're in the same, we both sell extensions, but there's room for both of us. And she was gracious. We just kind of were like, let's just bounce off some of our problems and challenges and what's worked and what's not worked. And she was just so helpful and so open and transparent. And then we got to meet in person at the event in Laguna. And it's just been really, she's just a great, great person. And she's been fun, fun to know.
That's cool. She's a super fun person, like upbeat and just full of energy. And she's a really, really full-spirited person. Well, Dafina, thank you for coming on. This has been, it's been super cool hearing like about your very fascinating, interesting life, the transition to away from direct to consumer and just talking all this kind of stuff. So yeah, thank you for willing to come on. Thank you for being a part of the community. You've been part of it for years. Of course, like you mentioned, been up to the event. Thank you for the people you've brought into it. And really, yeah, wish you the best going forward and excited to see how the brand evolves over the next 2-3 years and really respect how you're building it in a way that is focused on quality and relationships over just, you know, scaling up. And obviously if you get both, if you do, you know, if you have the discipline to do it right the first way. Yeah. Thanks for coming on and thanks for being a part of the community.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me, Andrew. And I'm going to go run off to my basement now.
Good luck with that tornado.
Okay. Thanks.
That's going to do it for this week. Again, a big thank you to the team at Klaviyo for making the show possible. The best place to send highly segmented messages via email and SMS to your customers to make more money. You can learn more about them and get started at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also brought to you by the eCommerce Fuel Private Community, a vetted forum and review directory of 1,000+ in the trenches experienced store owners that you can connect with to help grow your business. If you want to learn more about that and apply for membership, you can do that at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.